Ever noticed how your cat seems to have life figured out? While you're spiraling at 3 a.m. about tomorrow's presentation, your pet is sleeping soundly, completely unburdened by tomorrow's uncertainties. This isn't just cute, it's profound. Animals live entirely in the present moment, experiencing fear only when danger actually arrives, not in the endless loop of what-ifs that plague human consciousness. We've built entire industries around managing anxiety, yet we rarely pause to ask, what if the problem isn't fear itself, but our relationship with it? What if anxiety, shame, and fear aren't enemies to conquer, but messengers to decode? Sometimes the fastest way through fear is running straight toward it. Consider someone paralyzed by dating anxiety, unable to ask out a coworker. The solution? Intentionally collect 75 rejections in a single day by approaching strangers with the same scripted invitation. When Frank tried this, something unexpected happened. After 3 rejections, someone said yes, collapsing his motivation. He realized he'd been targeting women likely to reject him, gaming his own system. Then he spotted someone genuinely attractive and had a breakthrough. He stopped the task and called the coworker he actually cared about. Though she declined, the experience freed him to successfully ask someone else out shortly after. This counterintuitive approach reframes the entire problem. Rejection becomes success, acceptance becomes failure. The highly structured nature eliminates room for anxiety about technique or timing. You transform from passive victim to active participant, no longer controlled by fear, but conducting an experiment with it. Of course, not all rejection heals this quickly. When betrayal runs deep, healing requires time to grieve, rage, and eventually release the suffering we sometimes cling to. Here's the truth about public speaking. If you do it long enough, your worst nightmares will come true. Notes will vanish. You'll announce you're thrilled to be in Denver while standing in Portland. Your earring will snag on your jacket, pinning your ear to your shoulder. These moments feel catastrophic until you discover they're often your most powerful teaching opportunities. Despite consistent standing ovations, experienced speakers still feel pre-speech terror, racing hearts, sweaty palms, scattered thoughts. The revelation? Audiences don't merely tolerate mistakes, they're deeply inspired by them. After error-filled presentations, people line up not to complain, but to thank you for being so real. Your blunders give them permission to be imperfect too. Historically, podiums represented places where elite voices appeared flawless. When you drop your notes or discover your shoulder pad has migrated to your hip, you shatter that illusion. People see themselves reflected in you, both vulnerable and competent. This transforms public speaking from performance into authentic connection. The lessons extend everywhere. Treat all questions with respect, admit openly when you don't know something, and recognize you can't force understanding. Imperfection isn't just acceptable, it's what makes your message most powerful. Anxiety feels terrible. But like physical pain warning you to pull your hand from fire, it alerts you to legitimate dangers. A whitewater rafter died because he lacked healthy fear. Similarly, relationship anxiety often signals real boundary violations. When Joan's husband planned a week-long workshop with a female coworker, her anxiety spiked. Therapy helped her recognize legitimate concerns rather than just abandonment issues. When she approached him vulnerably, he canceled his plans and admitted feeling a little pull toward his coworker. Anxiety serves as a barometer for the opposing forces of separateness and togetherness in relationships. While excessive anxiety pushes us to extremes, either clinging desperately or walling ourselves off, moderate anxiety provides useful feedback about relationship health. Throughout evolutionary history, anxiety helped species survive. A healthy dose motivates positive changes, improving health habits, reassessing priorities, developing conscience, and fostering intimacy when vulnerabilities are shared. The challenge isn't eliminating anxiety, but learning to distinguish protective warnings from false alarms. While we discuss fears openly, shame often remains hidden, even from ourselves. Shame is profoundly debilitating, making us want to hide and withdraw. Unlike guilt about actions, shame attacks who we fundamentally are, carrying a nightmarish quality of exposure. We can even feel shame about others' behaviors. When Paula's teenage son accidentally burned down a building, making front page news, she felt tainted and began withdrawing, which only intensified her shame and paranoia. The solution? Stop hiding and connect with the very people you imagine are judging you. Paula forced herself to approach people, make eye contact, and use humor. This broke shame's grip because shame breeds in secrecy and isolation. Though shame feels deeply personal, its origins are social and political. Whatever gets stigmatized in culture becomes absorbed as personal shame. The most powerful antidote is collective action. Civil rights movements, adoption reform, women's movements demonstrate how joining together shrinks stigma. Shame cannot survive in the light of shared experience and mutual support. When Rhoda was diagnosed in her early 30s with a degenerative chronic illness, her friend Barbara responded with relentless positive thinking, affirmations, self-help books, insisting everything happened for a reason. Rhoda finally confronted her. The pressure to maintain cheerfulness felt unbearable. The conversation revealed Barbara's helplessness underneath her forced optimism. This honest exchange brought relief. Honesty about suffering created deeper connection than forced positivity ever could. Rhoda learned there's no value in drowning in fear, but there's also no value in pretending everything's fine. She practiced meditation, used biofeedback, connected with others online. Sometimes she simply sat with her suffering. Other times she discovered the value of pretending, forcing herself to have visitors or smile, finding that acting as if could evoke genuine feelings. The key was refusing to compare her suffering to others. Comparisons breed shame. There's no timeline for getting over it, no correct way to suffer. The challenge is living to the best of our possibilities, even in the face of pain. Fear will arrive uninvited throughout your life. The question isn't whether you'll feel afraid, it's how you'll conduct yourself when anxiety is high and shame kicks in. Courage isn't fearlessness. It's the capacity to think, speak, and act despite fear. True courage takes many forms: taking action on challenges you'd prefer to avoid, voicing difficult truths even while shaking, questioning painful family histories, listening with an open heart, thinking for yourself against group pressure, accepting responsibility for dishonorable behavior. The real obstacle isn't fear itself, but avoidance. When Jill described herself as afraid of everything, the problem was that she never let fear in. She avoided even slight departures from routine. Through therapy, she practiced tolerating anxiety by changing her walking route, ordering unfamiliar foods, eventually traveling to London despite daily urges to cancel. Each small act of courage built resilience. Fear, anxiety, and shame are part of being human. We can't eliminate them, but we can befriend them. Accept, and observe them mindfully as they rise and fall. Refuse to let these emotions silence your authentic voice. You don't need to conquer fear. You need to learn its language and keep dancing anyway.